On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Marcus Barrahall breaks down the gut-wrenching loss to the Philadelphia 76ers in overtime. Plus, Kyrie Irving is out for the year with that shoulder injury, and I'll give my thoughts on All-Star Weekend. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Marcus Barrahall. Josh will not be joining me today. He'll be back on the next podcast, so he'll give his thoughts on all the news very shortly. There is a ton of stuff to get into. We took a little break with All-Star weekend taking place. You know, Josh and I, sort of the podcast All-Stars, you know, we needed our own. I guess if we were the podcast All-Stars, we would have played. So we were not selected for the podcast All-Star team. So we took our little vacation, you know, Jared Dudley style. We pulled up, but now we're back. We're ready to get back into action. And the Brooklyn Nets had a game. I'm going to be talking about that. There was obviously some huge Kyrie news. I'll get into that as well. And then at the tail end of this podcast, I'll give my thoughts on All-Star Weekend. The Nets obviously had a couple guys participating in the Saturday night events in Joe Harris in the three-point contest and Spencer Dinwiddie in the skills challenge. So I'll talk about all that, but wanted to talk about the game first since it is the most top of mind. The Nets fell in overtime to the Philadelphia 76ers, 112-104. The Nets fall to 25-29 on the season. And wow, I don't have a ton to say other than that. This game was very, very strange. It gave me slight vibes of last season, the game against the Sacramento Kings. There was a huge comeback. I did a solo podcast after that game as well, and I remember just being like completely floored at what I had seen, and that was basically what happened in the first half. This game actually kind of, at least from like the like just raw score perspective, played out sort of similar to the All-Star game, where like one team got out ahead, then the other team not only came back but got out ahead themselves, and then it wound up being like a close finish at the end. But yeah, let's just start from the beginning. Philly jumped out to that massive lead. They led 20-4 at one point. Kenny Atkinson got a technical foul, really trying to do anything to spark the team, because the call he argued was pretty clear. But apparently, maybe it was a technical foul, maybe it was more likely subbing in DeAndre Jordan for Jared Allen, who had a terrible game. Maybe that was what did it. But regardless, the Nets turned things around. At the end of the first quarter, they were only down 6, which is crazy considering, like I said, it was 20-4. They were down 16 very early. And then it just kept going. The momentum did not stop. DeAndre Jordan was providing a lot of the defensive energy. And then on the offensive end, it was kind of a rotating cast. It was Caris LeVert attacking the hoop relentlessly. He kind of got cold in the second half, but in that first half, he was really effective. And as much credit as Kevin McHale and Marv Albert on the TNT broadcast were giving to DeAndre Jordan, rightfully so, for sparking the Nets' comeback defensively, I thought LeVert did an equally important job on the offensive end, just initiating everything, finding guys, hitting a bunch of tough mid-range shots, like little floaters and step backs from there, and then also just getting all the way to the basket, particularly with Embiid out of the game and with Horford kind of as the lone big. LeVert and DeAndre Jordan led the charge along with Garrett Temple, Wilson Chandler, and Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot, who played really well, attacked the hoop really well, just showed great energy in the brief amount of time he played, grabbed 3 offensive rebounds in the 16 minutes of action he was able to get. So he was very active. That fivesome kind of led the charge for the Nets. And then things looked incredible when it was 50-30, the Nets up 20, Philly crowd booing. I'm texting Josh, who was not watching the game, and I'm giving him all these updates. We're texting in all caps back and forth. And then you kind of got the feeling that things started to turn. I can't really point to a specific play, but that run at the end of the second quarter, the 12-2 run from Philly, cut it to a 10-point deficit at the half. The Nets led 52-42, and it's hard to explain, because if you told me just straight up, like, yeah, the Nets were down by 16 at one point, and then they're actually leading by 10 at the half now, I would, if I just heard that, I would think, oh, they have all the momentum, this is great. And yet, somehow, despite a 26-point turnaround, it felt like Philly had kind of seized the momentum. And that's exactly what happened. Brooklyn came out in the second half. Embiid had just a ferocious dunk to start things. But then the Nets did kind of stem the tide, and they kept it around that, like, 6 to 11-point range for the lead for the most part. And then Philly just slowly but surely kept climbing back in, until they eventually took the lead early on in the fourth quarter after trailing by one going into the third. And then from there, the Nets kind of got out of their offense. Kenny didn't really make many substitutions. He was kind of riding with the guys who he had on the floor. For the most part, that was Dinwiddie, LeVert, Harris, Chandler, Temple, and Jordan. That six-some kind of like rotating depending on offense, defense, or specific matchups, things like that. But he didn't really go back to a guy like TLC, who I would have liked to see more of. Jared Allen only played 13 minutes in this game, scored 0 points, only grabbed 2 rebounds, 0 for 4 from the field, minus 15. Like I mentioned, terrible game from him. Torian Prince, he only played 23 minutes in this game, 7 points on 8 shots, didn't play particularly well. At the same time, I think you could have probably given him a shot down the stretch or in overtime a little bit more, just because that plus-minus number is heavily influenced by the start of the game, as pretty much all five of the Nets starters' numbers were. Like LeVert, who played a key role, like I said, in that second quarter comeback, he was still minus 18 for the game because he was also on the court for that terrible run at the start of the game. So that number's a little bit skewed just because of how strange this game was in terms of, like, it was very run for run. So, like, it was pretty, not a lot of gray area for individual players in this game. But yeah, the Nets, this is a tough one to swallow. coming out of the All-Star break, the team had won two straight, by the way, against good opponents. Like, they beat Toronto and they beat Indy, and then the game before that, they lost by one to Toronto in that game where LeVert had 37 points, the career high. So they were playing really well. They had won 6 of 8 overall. Obviously, they still, despite that opening and closing to the game, they still played well in this game. You know, it's just frustrating to see them not able to close the deal, to see Spencer Dinwiddie missing key free throws late in the game. He was 7 for 10 in this game. Other than that, the team shot the ball pretty well from the free throw line. To see a bunch of turnovers. The Nets had 4 straight turnovers at one point in the fourth quarter when Philly was really mounting their comeback. And, yeah, just terrible late-game execution. Dinwiddie kind of with a bailout mid-range shot to put them up to, and then not having a center on the floor to guard Joel Embiid, so the team fouls him. He makes both free throws. Then on the other end, Dinwiddie, I think, made the right pass to find Chandler on the baseline there. I think it's obviously such a split-second decision, but I think the right move there would have been to just take that little 8-foot jumper on the baseline as opposed to trying to get inside against a guy like Joel Embiid. Like, I get what Chandler was going for. He was trying to either draw a foul or get an easier shot right at the rim, but I feel like with a guy like Embiid, his closing speed, I would feel more comfortable just settling for that mid-range shot when Josh and I have talked about this. It's not like an analytically friendly shot in a vacuum, but in a situation where you just need any sort of points, like, that shot is perfectly fine if it's wide open. In fact, it's probably preferred, and the points per shot, the expected value is definitely higher if you're wide open. So not a good decision from Chandler there, but like I said, that's pretty split second, pretty nitpicky. I thought he played well overall. The Cardio King brought a lot of energy to the floor, which was good to see. But if I'm going to talk about positives, the main guy is DeAndre Jordan, who stepped in for Jared Allen, who was not injured, was just bad. DeAndre played 37 minutes in this game, which is crazy considering where he's been at various points this season. 14 points, 15 rebounds, 7 of which were offensive. He was really controlling the glass for Brooklyn. He was doing a good job of limiting Joel Embiid. I think just by the end, he was too worn out. I mean, even coming off this break, like, he's not a guy who should be playing in the high 30s in minutes at this stage of his career. So he was a little overextended, which is kind of what the team as a whole looked like. Again, it's hard to excuse that because this is coming off such a big break in action for all of these guys. But yeah, it's still, it's definitely a reason. This is tough. Things only got tougher, though, with the news that came before the game about Kyrie Irving. I'll get into that really quickly. Kyrie Irving obviously missed a bunch of time earlier on this season with the shoulder injury. He missed 26 games with that specific injury, missed a couple other games here and there with various other ailments, and for personal reasons after the death of Kobe Bryant. And this news kind of trickled out over the course of the day on Thursday. At first, it was just like a story, I think from Shams Charania, reported at first that Irving was considering shoulder surgery after previously getting that cortisone shot that was supposed to kind of hopefully allow him to play through things, which he was for a little bit, but the pain apparently came back. And of course, leave it to Celtics Twitter. There are a bunch of just truly abysmal, terrible takes that Kyrie saw that the Nets were going to be playing the Celtics soon on the schedule on March 3rd. A, it's not that soon. That's like 2 weeks away. And B, just an absurd comment anyway. You don't get a surgery to avoid playing a team. You know, like, it's one thing if it's just like, oh, my back stiffened up or I turned an ankle and he misses just that one game and then he's back. That's not what happened. He missed... he's going to wind up by the end of the season having missed three quarters of the year. So just completely asinine for people to even throw that out there. But regardless, Kyrie is now out for the season. Sean Marks made it official later on in the day on Thursday before the game. So that was kind of the talk on Inside the NBA before the game and a lot of the time during the game on the broadcast, which I was a little bit disappointed by. I kind of wanted to hear what the national media thought of the Nets, which I guess is probably not a lot. They mixed up the names a lot. Mikhail, I think, called LaVert Dinwiddie at one point. You know, Marv Albert, at this point of his life, is not known for his accuracy in broadcast, so maybe it's for the best that they had this to kind of distract them. They could talk about this. But going forward, long term, this is fine. I'm not trying to be the meme with the dog in the fire. This is legitimately fine. The Nets weren't going anywhere this year. Josh and I had talked about how this was a transitional year. It was always going to be a pretty awkward year for the Brooklyn Nets just because everyone knows where they've been and everyone knows where they're going. It was just kind of this one year that was up in the air, a year where, you know, there was definitely room for things to go particularly well. Like, if Kyrie Irving was able to prove to certain people that he was able to lead a team by himself and kind of be that vocal leader and take guys under his wing and, you know, be the only star leading a team maybe to the second round or something. You know, that was something that could have happened this season, but that's not really, like, necessary. Like, that would have just, I guess, I honestly, like, thinking over, like, in my head I'm going to say, like, that was going to prove the doubters wrong or something, but I don't think it would have. Like, I just mentioned those people talking about the Celtics game. I think that the people who think that the Nets and that teams in general are better when Kyrie Irving is not playing for them are for the most part trolls, and so nothing would have changed, is my opinion, if Kyrie Irving had played. The team would have gotten better chemistry-wise, which Josh and I have talked about, particularly the newer guys. You know, there's guys like Dinwiddie, LaVert, Harris, and Jared Allen, for that matter, who have been playing together for a couple of years now. They kind of know each other pretty well. It would have been nice to have Kyrie worked in with those guys, but also for the newer guys like Wilson Chandler, Garrett Temple, Torian Prince, just to kind of see how, not everything because you don't have KD, but how most of the pieces would fit together going forward next year. We'll still be able to see a lot of that, but it's going to be a lot of guys in roles that they won't be playing next year. And they talked about that during the halftime show about how Shaq was saying, like, this is the Nets that we saw last year where everybody eats, where they could have a bunch of different guys getting between, like, 12 and 24 points, and that's kind of a recipe for success for them. But how next year the team's going to have to change. You know, you can't add Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant into this team and expect them to play the same way. So definitely a lot of changes going into next year. I still haven't talked to Josh about this, but I still expect the Nets to make the playoffs this year. They're still in the seventh seed, I believe, as of right now. They are, yeah, they're a game and a half ahead of the Magic still. They're pretty clear of the Wizards, Hornets, Bulls, like that amalgam of just atrocities basketball-wise between 9th and like 12th or 13th in the NBA standings. But for Brooklyn, there's not a lot you can really do the rest of the season. Like, you're missing two guys who are going to account for probably half of your usage next season. So this is going to be a team that's completely different. It's just basically going to be about talent evaluation the rest of the way, I think, trying to decide who, if anyone, you want to trade from this roster, who you want to keep around, who you want to try in different spots. Like, do you want to try a guy like Kurucs, playing out there with Prince? You know, maybe you have those two and Durant as a front court for certain lineups, certain matchups. Do you want to try more Dinwiddie LeVert together, which you're going to have to now, but like, as opposed to staggering them, like trying them together, maybe as like a kind of an anchor on the second unit once Kyrie is back. You know, there's a lot of different combinations that Kenny can kind of experiment with and just see what he's feeling and what works. So bottom line, just to kind of bring this back around full circle, I don't think that this particular news is, obviously it's not good news. You never want a player to be out for the season with an injury, but I don't think it's like terrible news by any stretch of the imagination. Obviously, this is all assuming that Kyrie comes back fully healthy. He's had a history of injuries in his career, but nothing quite like this season in Brooklyn for him. So hopefully he's able to have the surgery, have no complications, come back with KD fresh for next year. Both guys should be well rested. I mean, that would be one benefit of this, maybe. So get those guys back next year, see what the team looks like in the off season, if they make any trades, anything like that. But for the rest of this season, I think just try to fight as much as you can. Try to maybe make a little bit of upset noise in the first round, maybe win a game or two like they did last season in the playoffs. And then, yeah, just go from there into the off season. Shifting gears a little bit now to talk about All-Star Weekend. There were a ton of eyes on the actual All-Star game with the new ending format, the Elam ending, named after Nick Elam, who that system was first used, I believe, in the basketball tournament TBT. Elam gave a really nice interview on the Low Post this week that I definitely recommend. That was great. That was incredible. That game was phenomenal, especially down the stretch, just seeing what the game became. Like, it was, people said it gave them like memories of like a game seven or like a playoff atmosphere. I thought it was completely different, and like the tightness just from the lack of clock and like everyone just kind of like tightening up. It was really strange to see, and to see like all of the best guys out there, with the exception of a couple, Luka Doncic not on the floor. But yeah, it was an incredible All-Star game, definitely the best one of my lifetime that I've seen. But to make this a little bit more Nets-centric, you know, there was some Nets news, not news, but some Nets involvement in All-Star Weekend on Saturday. Joe Harris competed in the three-point contest, and Spencer Dinwiddie competed in the skills challenge. Dinwiddie won the skills challenge a couple years ago and then had the injury last year, so he couldn't defend his title. So in a way, he was the reigning champ of that event, you know, in some ways. And Joe Harris was the legitimate reigning champ of the three-point contest. Neither guy won. Neither guy got out of the first round. Joe Harris, I think, got confused by the new Mountain Dew zone, which I would be confused by if not, if for nothing else than just for the fact that it's called the Mountain Dew zone. Not really sure why, but they added that. He kind of went past it and then had to go back to take that shot in the first go round, and that clearly threw off his rhythm. And then for Dinwiddie, he just got unlucky. The skills challenge, I like it, but it's pretty fluky. Like, it really just comes down to, do you make that first 3-pointer at the end, which Bam Adebayo did. He wound up winning the whole thing, so if there's any solace to take from that, it's that Dinwiddie lost to the champ, you know? So he didn't just lose to a slouch. He lost to the guy who wound up winning the whole thing. So hopefully next year the Nets have even more participation in All-Star Weekend. They could have two, I'm not going to say three, but maybe three. I guess I said it anyway. They might have three All-Stars next year if they're able to either see some improvement from LeVert or Dinwiddie, or if, who knows, one of those guys gets traded in a package for a guy. I don't know. But yeah, assuming health and assuming that things click the way they should, the Nets should have at least two All-Stars next year in Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, which will be really exciting. Getting to see those guys involved in the new, like, All-Star draft will be really cool. Yeah, just looking forward to next year is the main point. Next year is going to be very fun. The rest of this year, I think, will still be fun because this Nets group is a group that I have grown to love, that fans have grown to love over the last couple of years. That core, led by Dinwiddie and LeVert, Harris, and Allen, that foursome really as, like, the anchors of the last 2 or 3 years of this Nets team. So it'll be fun to watch those guys. It'll be fun to see what Dinwiddie can do as, like, the number one guy going into the playoffs. Obviously, D'Lo was that guy last year. It'll be fun to see if LeVert can, like, really put it all together and maybe take some steps down the stretch here. You know, he's got an opportunity. He's going to get the ball. He's going to get a ton of shots like he did in this Sixer game. He took a career-high 29 shots in this game to score his 25 points. So not a great start in that regard. But yeah, he's going to get an opportunity. Dinwiddie's going to get an opportunity. Dinwiddie talked about how without Kyrie, he feels it's his responsibility to get Joe Harris involved. It'll be cool to see if Joe maybe can step up his sort of secondary or tertiary playmaking, sort of when he gets the catch on a kickout and then does the pump and drive, if he can start getting a couple assists that way on driving kicks, things like that. We'll be looking to see if Jared Allen makes any leaps forward in terms of his consistency of his aggression, because I think when he does play engaged, we've seen it for games at a time. We've seen it for stretches of games at a time. He's capable of putting up 20-20 games. It's just a matter of coming locked in and keeping that confidence high, which he did not seem to have in this Sixer game tonight. So a lot to watch still, even without Kyrie Irving and without Kevin Durant the rest of this season. But regardless, Josh and I will be here to take you through all of it. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at LockedOnNets. Josh does most of the tweeting from that account. He's been doing a lot lately of this is actually probably my favorite story from All-Star Weekend, the common player introductions for the All-Star game, where it was like just a quick, like, four bar, I guess, where he kind of like did a sloppy rhyme with every player's name. Josh tweeted out a couple of those from the Locked On Nets account about certain players. Definitely going to, might be in tweets and replies if you don't see it on our actual feed, because I think it was replying to a prompt from someone. So definitely check that out. My point, I guess, is just follow Locked On Nets on Twitter for content like that, for tweets during games, for all of our rapid opinions, things like that, that will come at you faster than the podcast will. Follow myself at Marcus Barahal. Josh is at jmbass_. And yeah, we'll be back in your ears soon. The Nets play again on Saturday against Charlotte. The schedule lightens up a little bit. We've got Charlotte, Orlando, Washington, Atlanta, Miami, Boston, Memphis, San Antonio, Chicago. So definitely over the next month or so, there are a ton of winnable games for Brooklyn. A lot on the road, though, so still a challenge. And as we've seen with the Nets, they can play up to the best like they have in these last couple games. They can compete with high-level playoff teams, but they can also lose to a team like the Knicks. So every game will be one to watch for sure. Stay tuned to that, and we'll be back soon. Until next time, be well. Bye.